It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
And good Friday morning, everyone. Fred Jackson sitting in for Sandy today. We're just discussing before we went on the program here with our producers. Aren't you glad it's Friday? And, you know, it's not like wishing your life away, folks, but this week has been a stressful week. It really has. Started off Monday morning, most of us learning about that headline about the massacre in Las Vegas. Just been a tough week, Rob.
I think it really weighs heavy on all of us.
Yeah.
You know, it's just see the tragedy and the lives that were destroyed, lives changed. Mm-hmm. It's been tough.
It's been a tough week, and, you know, it's a story that needs to be covered, has to be covered, and unfortunately we're at this point in the week where authorities still haven't been able to figure out the motive behind Mr. Paddock, what he did there. Now, we are learning some interesting details over the last 24 hours. Apparently, it's been confirmed, and I guess the FBI obviously been going through his emails and perhaps talking to some other people who knew him, that he apparently scoped out other venues. He was in Chicago. He was in Boston. Apparently, he was looking at Fenway Park, that sort of thing. So,
right.
I mean, we're getting these details, but we still don't know what was in the man's mind to go out and do such a horrible, horrible thing. I mean, the mystery still remains is that he had really no record other than a traffic ticket or something like that with authorities. We do know he's purchased a pile of weapons over the last several years. He had a pile of weapons in the room with him. There at the Mandalay in Las Vegas. But you know what? The other good side of this story, and please hear me out on this, are the accounts of the heroes.
Right.
Of what people did. For instance, there were people who were off-duty first responders. They were there for that concert, that country music concert. And they kept helping people. They kept going back into the rain of fire to bring people out. So we've heard that. And then there was the incident the other day when President Trump and First Lady Melania were at one of the hospitals there in Las Vegas. And a young man who had been wounded in the incident, when the First Lady and the President walked into that hospital room, he got out of his bed. He says, you know, this is the President of the United States. I love my country. And I'm going to stand.
Hmm.
Here's what I thought, Rob, on that story.
Yeah.
What does that say to the football players?
Absolutely.
That's what came to my mind.
Mine immediately too, Fred. We're on the same track there.
Yeah.
Said if this guy can get out of a bed with a bullet that's gone through his leg and stand for the president and the first lady, why can't these players who have been given so much stand for our national anthem?
Yeah, I know. That came to my mind. So as I say, you know, out of this, and this happens every time, whatever the tragedy is, whether it's a shooting like this or whether it's, you know, hurricanes, you get these stories of the fabric of many people in this country who are willing to risk their own lives to help others whose lives have been placed in jeopardy. And those stories have come out, and I think we need to hold on to those stories, and we need to celebrate those stories. Unfortunately, another aspect of this story has been what some would call, and I tend to agree with them, the knee-jerk reaction of the left on this, is that this is all the fault of guns. And this has been addressed throughout the week. I think Hillary Clinton was one of the first, and then you had others coming out, and the Democrats holding news conferences this week that we have to do something. And this was addressed on the Fox program, The Five, last night. And its program, as you might discern, it's 5 o'clock in the evening on Fox News, and there are a bunch of people sitting around a table. And one of them is Jesse Waters. And if you're familiar to our programs and to Fox News, you know who Jesse Waters is. He's a young man who often goes on college campuses and questions kids about where they are in their brains about various issues. But he was responding last night to a editorial by a so-called conservative that works for the New York Times. And, this so-called conservative columnist with the New York Times was agreeing with the left on this one that something must be done about the gun problem in our country because guns are causing so much havoc and so much grief in this country. So let's have a listen to how Jesse Waters responded to that last night.
What, hundreds of thousands of Americans die each year because of heart disease and diabetes? Are you going to ban fast food? A million people die from alcohol. You're going to ban booze. When someone gets stabbed, do you blame the knife? No. When someone hits someone with their car, do you blame the car? No, you blame the person. But then why, when you shoot someone, you blame the gun? It makes no sense. I researched the segment, got some great stats. Stat off.
Oh, finally, for once.
2/3 of gun deaths in the United States are suicides.
That's right.
Let that sink in. 1 in 5 were young men aged 15 to 34 killed in homicides, gang-related. Something along those lines. Usually illegal guns, handguns. Most mass shootings are an infinitesimal percentage of the gun deaths, and most homicides are committed with handguns, right, not AR-15. So that should put everything into perspective. You guys were arguing in the break. I just want to make sure everybody understands this. When people get shot in Chicago on the weekend, dozens, the left says nothing. But when the same amount of people are killed by one shooter, they go after the guns. What's the difference?
Yeah, what's the difference? And one other aspect, Jesse Waters there from Fox News mentioning Chicago. Here's the other factor that's not mentioned when we talk about Chicago. Chicago has some of the toughest gun laws in the country. But it doesn't stop. Folks, what this goes to, and as Christians we know this, evil lies in the hearts of individuals. It doesn't lie in a gun or a knife, or a car.
Absolutely.
Those are objects. They don't have a conscience. They don't have a soul. They don't have a spirit. It lies in the hearts of men. And we do not know why Stephen Paddock did what he did. We don't know yet. We may never know.
Right.
Because the as far as what authorities are telling us to this point, they're having a tough time figuring this guy out. You know, they brought his girlfriend back from the Philippines earlier this week. And, I mean, if you believe what she says, that Paddock sent her out of the country so she wouldn't be involved with his plot, carrying out his plot. So, as I say, we may never know, but what we do know, he had evil intentions which were carried out. And what good can come out of this? I was listening to either a current police superintendent in Boston, because, as I mentioned a few moments ago, apparently Paddock scoped out Fenway Park. But this police superintendent who dealt with the marathon bomber back a few years ago, the Islamic marathon bomber there in Boston, during the Boston Marathon. And he said he does believe that even more security is going to be added to these big venues where there are a lot of people. Our family went to a hockey game in Nashville last weekend, and it has become common practice now that, for instance, ladies with purses going in are all checked. You go through a scanner of some type like you do at the airport, that kind of thing. So those kinds of things are being done. Of course, that's very different from what happened in Las Vegas. There were barriers put around where the people were,
right.
But this guy had a venue at an adjacent hotel. So what they're saying, I think, is that when you, in the future, when you have these perhaps big music events that are outside where people have visual access to the crowd, that other things are going to have to be done. And that's good. We can learn from these things, and it's, but it's unfortunate that we live in this kind of world now where we have to think about these things all the time.
It's horrible, Fred. It's just it's become a way of life now.
Mm-hmm.
And that says a lot about society.
Mm-hmm.
Is how do we get to this?
Yeah.
I know, you know.
Yes.
How we got to this?
Oh, absolutely. It's when the restraints against evil are taken off.
Exactly.
And there are many different reasons for that in our country, because evil is being redefined.
Yes.
That's one of the reasons. But also that, you know, in many places now evil is celebrated, and the reality is too, and this has been mentioned by various people, we now in this country, we live in a culture of death, because of abortion, that kind, you know, abortion was mentioned. I think it's still over 900,000 little babies' lives are taken every year in this country.
Mm.
And, so we live in that kind of culture. Where, despite the, you know, the videos that came out of Planned Parenthood and what goes on behind the scenes and the selling of little baby body parts, and that leads us to another story this morning. And this, quite frankly, can be very upsetting when we see Republicans, even though the Republican Party platform, supposedly in words, takes a strong stand for life. You know, earlier in this week, the House passed a bill which would outlaw abortions after 20 weeks. And that was passed pretty well along party lines in the House. Now, it's going to go over to the Senate. And Republican Senator Lindsey Graham is willing to put a bill forward in the Senate. But listen to this. Here's the headline from the Washington Examiner yesterday. Lindsey Graham says he doesn't support ending filibuster as he introduces abortion ban. Now, what's the filibuster? Well, that it's going to require 60 votes to pass. And quite frankly, folks, in the day and age in which we live, that's a kiss of death. That bill is not going to pass. Therefore, you know, despite the Republicans and how they cheer themselves for being pro-life, unless you end that filibuster, unless you make it a simple majority, then it's not going to pass. And Lindsey Graham knows that. It would take eight Democrats to vote with the Republicans for banning abortions after 20 weeks. And you're not going to find eight Democrats. You may find one or two, but you're not going to find eight Democrats to bring it up to that 60. And Rob, it gets frustrating. And I know those who vote Republican, and let's go back to 2016, there was a hope that if Republicans won the White House, they won the House and the Senate, that these kinds of things would be taken care of. But here we are. I mean, we haven't been able to get a vote on Obamacare, repealing Obamacare. And now you have something as what seems so straightforward to us. This is not banning abortions. This is banning abortions after 20 weeks. And the other side will say, well, there's very few abortions anyway done after 20. That's not the point. Can you not even give us this, Republicans? And there you have Lindsey Graham saying, yeah, I'm all for this ending abortions after 20 weeks, but you know what? I don't want to end the filibuster. I want to keep that 60-vote margin. As I say, these Republicans know it ain't going to happen.
They're using it to hide, you know, to say, look what I did. And then what they did has no consequence.
Absolutely. All right, folks, you're listening to Sandy Rios in the Morning on this Friday. Fred Jackson sitting in for Sandy. By the way, Sandy is wearing her other hat here at AFA, Director of Governmental Affairs. She's in Washington, D.C. today. She's with a group who's meeting with Attorney General Jeff Sessions. I'd like to be a fly on the wall of that meeting. Hey, we're back right after the break.
So What would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
American Family Radio, impacting lives.
I spent some time in federal prison. You're allowed a small Walkman-type radio when you're there, and the only station that I could really pick up that came in clear every day was AFR radio. Be a source of strength and courage to go through what I was going through. The songs, the testimonies, the programs all let me go one day at a time, knowing God was there and that He was with me all through it. Now that I'm out of prison, the radio station that's still tuned on my radio is AFR, and that's the only radio station I listen to. It was a blessing when I was incarcerated, and it's a blessing now.
Your partnership with American Family Radio keeps your family informed on the issues of the day. Join us for our three-day share-a-thon starting October 17th.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Former First Lady Michelle Obama's in the headlines. She was talking about diversity the other day at the Pennsylvania Conference for Women. Mrs. Obama told the gathering the reason people don't trust politics is because the Republican Party is made up of white men. All white, all men. That's what she said. She went on to say that the color and gender dichotomy in Congress was very noticeable at State of the Union addresses. On one side, she said it's literally gray and white. The other side of the room, she observed, was a bit more colorful. It's unfortunate Mrs. Obama said what she said. It would be even more unfortunate if she believes what she said. Martin Luther King Jr. once shared with us his dream for his children. He dreamed of a nation where they would be judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
And welcome back to Sandy Rios in the morning on this Friday. Fred Jackson sitting in for Sandy today. Set off the top of the program, I think most Americans are glad it is a Friday. It's been a stressful week. And our thoughts and prayers continue to be with those affected by what happened in Las Vegas late on Sunday evening, and especially with those families who lost loved ones. I was reading the latest account this morning. There are still about just over 170 people being treated in various hospitals there in Las Vegas. So let's continue to remember them also. The mystery continues this morning as to why Stephen Paddock did this. We don't know much more. As we were saying, apparently authorities have found out that he scoped out some other venues over the last several weeks where he might have done something similar. That's a scary thought. But as I say, let's continue to pray. I know one of those that has been watching all of this going on this week and has had some things to say about the shooting itself and then the reaction certainly from liberals to all of this. And that's our good friend Gary Bauer with Campaign for Working Families in Washington, D.C. And Gary joins us on the line this morning. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Fred. How are you?
Not too bad. How about you? Glad it's Friday?
Yes, glad it's Friday. It's we're living in difficult and challenging times. And I worry about the country, and certainly we're all worried about our fellow citizens that are still dealing with the loss of loved ones or battling the injuries they sustained last Sunday morning, last Sunday night.
You know, the expected, Gary, and you've been in Washington for a long time, and I guess, sadly, we come to expect this, that on the left, the immediate response was it's all the fault of gun laws, lack of gun laws. We need to do something to do the Second Amendment, et cetera, et cetera. It is amazing to me that the left in such a knee-jerk fashion does that, but never at least publicly considers the fact it was the evil in this man's heart and not an object that caused this.
Well, it's a great summary, Fred. You're exactly right. Now, of course, the left, broadly speaking, has embraced moral relativism a long time ago. And, you know, all the research shows that not everybody on the left, but a lot of people on the left are very secular. They tend to, as I said, to believe in materialism. If you can't see it, it doesn't exist. So they have very low church attendance, by and large. Not everybody, but by and large, they do. And they don't like to think in terms of evil. It's all sickness or psychological problems or, you know, fill in the blank. But they sure have one thing they feel strongly about, is that no matter what kind of a thug commits a crime with a gun, their first impulse is to try to limit the gun rights that's in our Constitution and that the American people enjoy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've seen over and over again and around the world where there are incredibly tough gun laws, people just use other things. The jihadists in Nice, France, used a truck to mow down and murder, I believe, more people that tragically died in Las Vegas the other night. So, you know, it's just like the left hates nuclear weapons. Well, I mean, a nuclear weapon has no moral implications one way or the other. It all depends who has it. A nuclear weapon in the hands of America is a force for good. A nuclear weapon in the hands of North Korea is something that ought to keep all decent men and women around the world awake at night. So yeah, you're absolutely right. The left tried to politicize this literally before all the bodies had been cleared off of the concert grounds.
Gary, your mention of nuclear weapons brings us to another story this morning that Fox has a headline on this, quoting President Trump, who apparently met yesterday with some of his senior military leaders. And, of course, they're talking about North Korea. They're talking about Iran. And, President, I'll just read you a little bit of this story. President Donald Trump said yesterday it was, quote, the calm before the storm, as he met with senior military leaders amid increasing tensions around the globe and speculation of changes in foreign policy. And the president's use of the ominous phrase prompted others to question what he meant, and to which the president replied, even more ominously, you'll find out. So I guess what he is talking about there is how he plans to respond to North Korea. And in particular, I think the latest is on Iran. Apparently, there's a speech planned by the president next week with regards to that, perhaps decertifying the Iranian nuclear deal.
Yes, you're right. Washington's buzzing this morning about that little phrase the president used. No one knows for sure, of course, what he was thinking when he said that. I have my own theory, which is that the leaders of North Korea have seen one U.S. president after another cave in to North Korean demands, and this was before North Korea had developed a nuclear weapon and had developed the missiles that look like they're capable of delivering that nuclear weapon. So, like Pavlov's dog, you know, when you ring a bell and then feed the dog, that when you ring the bell, the dog salivates. we've taught a string of U.S. presidents, and the American foreign policy establishment has taught North Korea that no matter how bellicose and threatening they get, at the end of the day, American presidents accommodate them, pay them off, try to quiet them down, ask them what they want, et cetera. So Donald Trump has been trying during his presidency to send a message to North Korea, I'm not like the other presidents. You're not going to extort the United States as long as I'm president. You're not going to threaten our allies, threaten the American people. Don't mess with me, or you won't be around very long. And so I think even a statement like the one in the Oval Office yesterday, almost a throwaway line, this is the calm before the storm, he knows that North Korea is monitoring everything he says, and I think he wants them to be very worried that unless they back off, they're going to be in for a big surprise. So we'll see how it plays out, but it is kind of amazing that reporters that a year or so ago, 2 years ago, laughed at the idea that Donald Trump would become president, now hang on his every word and try to inject great meaning into every sentence. On Iran, I do think next week the president is not going to blow the Iran deal up, although I think we should. But he is going to announce that, I think he's going to announce that they're not really complying with the spirit of the agreement, and that they're not allowing inspections in places that unless we can inspect, we can't tell whether they're following the letter of the agreement. And he's going to sort of boot this thing to the Congress and say, look, I want you to put stronger economic sanctions on them and see what happens.
How do you think Congress will respond to that?
There are so many chapped fingers on Capitol Hill these days because they're stuck up in the air trying to figure out which way the wind's blowing that I have no idea what they're going to do, but I'm not optimistic. The left in the Congress will oppose anything the president does. And unfortunately, there's a core group of Republican senators, not the majority, but not a small group either, that just seems to lack courage. We've got people like Susan Collins and some of the others, Senator Murkowski, that just seem at every turn to throw nails on the road to try to prevent the administration from being successful and to prevent the Republicans who do have this narrow majority in the Senate from getting done the things that everybody was promised would get done if, in fact, we had the House and Senate and the White House.
You know, that's not a good political environment for the Republicans as we head into next year's election, which goes to another story. And a lot of these stories kind of got buried this week, and rightly so, because of coverage of what was going on in Las Vegas. But earlier this week, there was a Politico story quoting the chief of staff for Vice President Mike Pence. His name is Nick Ayers. Apparently, yeah, he was meeting with a group of wealthy donors to the Republicans, and I'm paraphrasing this just to break this down quickly to get your reaction to it. Basically, he said, you know what, you donors who believe in what the Republican Party stands for, maybe it is time that you started to put your money, your financial support behind people who are going to support the president's agenda rather than fight against it, as you've just been addressing people like Susan Collins and others. And he said he was speaking just his personal opinion. He said he wasn't quoting his boss, Vice President Pence, or quoting the president. But I think it's still significant that the chief of staff of the Vice President of the United States would come out and say that.
Well, I do too. My sources tell me that if it was not something that the Vice President told him to do, mm-hmm, nonetheless, I think it reflects the thinking of the White House and of many Republican voters that If people that have run for office with an R next to their name and say they're for lower taxes and a strong national defense and say they're pro-life and pro-family and they want our borders to be secure, but then after they get into office and they have a chance to accomplish some of those things, this handful of Republican senators thwarts all those efforts, then I think it is good advice to tell donors to the party, look, there are primaries. There's a chance to pick a different candidate for the party to run for a particular seat, and one ought to do that. So I think we saw that a little bit down in Alabama with Judge Moore, mm-hmm. Where the entire party establishment was with then Senator Strange, Luther Strange, and Judge Moore was backed by the grassroots, and he ended up winning. And I noticed yesterday in Tennessee that the establishment-oriented governor of Tennessee announced he would not run to fill the Senate vacancy that will occur when Senator Corker doesn't run for re-election. And there are a couple of very strong conservatives that are edging toward running.
Yeah.
So I think we're beginning to see the Republican Party be transformed from more of an establishment party to a populist conservative party, and that's a good thing, I believe.
Yeah, some people are calling it kind of the resurgence of the Tea Party movement of 2010.
Yes. Well, you know, it's been kind of amazing to watch in recent years. There have been these exciting grassroots movements like the Tea Party movement and then the Trump movement. And every time these new people stand up and say, hey, we want to be part of the Republican Party, we can help you, you can help us, there are a lot of people in the Republican establishment that look like they get all nervous at the idea that the club might actually get bigger. So, you know, I thought the whole purpose of a political party was to grow, and some of these established Republicans, you know, they're always talking about wanting a big tent, and what they really mean is they want to back off on abortion and some of those other issues. But here's a chance to actually be a big tent and not abandon any of the issues the Republicans care about, but to actually do them, secure the border, you know, restrict abortion, promote religious rights against the attacks that are taking place on it, and particularly the last 8 years in the Obama administration. So this is a real important defining moment for the Republican Party, and I hope they get it right.
You know, we were talking a few moments ago on the program, the fact that now the Senate is going to take a look at this bill that has passed the House to ban abortions after 20 weeks. Senator Lindsey Graham yesterday, yeah, I'm all for the bill, but I'm going to stick with the filibuster. Well, that's kind of the kiss of death to that bill, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I do agree, and this is a perfect example, you know, of some of these guys being more wedded to arcane procedural rules in the Senate than they actually are wedded to the ideas that we believe in and getting them implemented. Now, look, a bit of good news here. You know, people say, oh, the parties are all alike. Well, they really aren't. I mean, in the House, they did vote to ban abortions after 20 weeks. And virtually all the Democrats, except for two or three, voted against banning abortions after 20 weeks. Mm-hmm. And virtually every Republican in the House of Representatives, except two or three, voted to ban those abortions.
Yeah.
So there are huge differences between the two parties.
Yeah.
And it's most obvious in the House.
Mm-hmm.
In the Senate, it gets a little bit more murky, unfortunately.
That's for sure. Hey, Gary Bauer, great to talk to you again. Campaign for Working Families. You put out a great end of day every day. How do folks get that?
They can go to OurAmericanValues.org, OurAmericanValues.org, and sign up there.
Gary, glad to have you in Washington. Thank you so much.
Great to be with you, Fred.
All right, take care. All right, we're going to open up phones when we come back after the break. 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Your thoughts on this week and where the Republican Party appears to be headed. 888-589-8840. Your thoughts when we come back.
But evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. British doctors have been told not to use the word mother when referring to pregnant women in case it offends transgender people. New guidelines issued by the Doctors' Trade Union, the British Medical Association, to its 160,000 members explained a large majority of people that have been pregnant or have given birth identify as women. However, there are some intersex men and trans men who may get pregnant. We can be more inclusive by saying pregnant people instead of expectant mothers. Once you untether from the Lord, there's no telling how far you may drift.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hi, friends. This is Janet Parshall, host of In the Market with Janet Parshall, congratulating AFA for upholding the truth in America for 40 years. From its inception until now, AFA has been a strong and bold ambassador, declaring the truth in our nation. Your leaders are brave, your voices are clear, and your passion is unrelenting. So thanks for remaining faithful over the course of four decades. We live in treacherous times when ministries like yours are desperately needed. May God continue to show his favor to AFA as you expose darkness and shine the light of Jesus Christ.
Hey family, this is Lauren from Living Life with Lauren, and I want you to know just how much I appreciate you, and I count it an honor and a privilege to bring you interviews weekly with godly speakers, teachers, and authors that point us all to a closer walk with Jesus. Thank you for listening, telling your friends, downloading our podcast, and of course, connecting with me on Facebook, Living Life with Lauren, and Lauren Kitchen Stewart. I would love to hear from you. We're heard every Saturday evening at 8 Central Time on American Family Radio. Join us.
This is Dan Celia from Financial Issues.
You know, we look at the volatility in the markets right now, or the lack of anything in the markets, and this is a great time to take a pause, rethink all of our portfolio, look at our asset allocation model. Are we following the asset allocation model as it should be? Are we overweighted one place or another? You know, I've been an advocate for biblically responsible investing for many, many years. I've been an advocate for charitable gift annuity because I'm an advocate for permanent income. Call the AFA Foundation to start talking about it.
A knowledgeable AFA Foundation representative will gladly explain the nuances of charitable gift annuities and answer your questions. Find out about charitable gift annuities when you call 800-326-4543, extension 345. 800-326-4543, extension 345, or by visiting afafoundation.net.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. On October 12th, President Trump is expected to announce his decision regarding Barack Obama's fraudulent nuclear deal with Iran. His senior subordinates, or more accurately, insubordinates, reportedly want him to say this: "The Iran deal is the worst ever negotiated. Iran is not complying with the deal. The deal is not consistent with the vital interests of the United States, and we're going to stay in it." That's the sort of incoherent nonsense that has given the Washington swamp a bad name. American voters were offered the opportunity to continue to be governed by such addled policies and rejected it, choosing instead to elect someone who denounced the deal as fatally flawed. In particular, those who elected Donald Trump thought he would get rid of it. It's time to establish that this is not Barack Obama's third term. Kill, don't perpetuate, the Obama bomb deal. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
And welcome back to the Friday edition of Sandy Rios in the Morning. Fred Jackson sitting in for Sandy today. Sandy is up in Washington, D.C. today. And she and a group of others will be meeting with the Attorney General of the United States, Jeff Sessions. Not sure of the agenda yet, but I'm sure it'll be very interesting. Sandy, of course, along with being the host of her program here on American Family Radio each morning, Monday to Friday at 7 o'clock Central. She's also the Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association. And we're so glad that she reps us at those meetings. I'm sure she'll probably want to talk about it a little bit, knowing Sandy, come Monday morning. So be tuned for that. Hey, listen, just before we go to our phones, Our good friends at the Media Research Center yesterday sent out their analysis of the mainstream networks, TV networks, news, ABC, CBS, and NBC, evening news. Their coverage of the president during the month of September. Now, this is probably not going to shock you, but according to their analysts, the president received 92% bad press. 92% of the stories done by these major networks were negative against the president. It's been this way. And I guess we shouldn't be surprised by the intensity of how much they dislike this president. You know, I've said to people, it doesn't matter what the president says or doesn't say, does or doesn't do, he's going to be criticized for it. But look at what's happened over the last 4 or 5 weeks. We have the president of the United States has had to deal with a hurricane that hit Texas. Another hurricane hits Florida. Now, Puerto Rico. Massacre now in Las Vegas that he had to deal with as the president of the United States. If you would just take an honest look at things, he has done an absolutely incredible job. And the people of the United States, more and more people are realizing that, if they're honest and looking how, you know, I think he went to Texas actually twice in the wake of the hurricane.
I believe you're right.
Yeah. And then into Florida, over to, and this is in the wake of what happened in Las Vegas on Sunday night. Many people in Puerto Rico that suffered two hurricanes thought he would cancel that trip because of what happened in Las Vegas. No, he went. And of course, they're still going to criticize because the mayor of San Juan, who is a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, just criticized him regardless of what he did. The massive effort that has gone into Puerto Rico, despite other resources being used still to help Texas and Florida recover. And then the president, of course, went to Las Vegas. But still, there you have it, 92%. Here's what's going on, folks. The mainstream media, ideologically speaking, are Democrats. They just hate anything conservative. They hate the fact that Donald Trump defeated Hillary Clinton, and they've gone to war against this president. Back a few weeks ago, I had the opportunity. I've been a member of a news directors group for many years now and attended their convention. And, of course, they're defending their coverage of Donald Trump. And here's what one of the leaders said to me. He said, we just have to educate the public about the difference between opinion and news coverage. And I said to him, well, there's the problem. Because now you have opinion infiltrating news coverage. It's not news coverage anymore, folks. These reporters, these anchors are expressing their personal opinions about Donald Trump through the news.
Editorials.
Oh, editorials. Editorials have gone in. There is a place for editorials. There's a place for opinion columns, all of that sort of thing. But what has happened is that the reporters have taken upon themselves to inject their personal feelings. And surveys have been done. We talked about this before. Surveys have been done by secular groups. The vast, vast, vast majority of network reporters all vote Democrat. So there you have it, folks. So we ought not be surprised by these kinds of numbers coming out. All right, let's go to our phones. Let's go first to Mississippi this morning. And Velissa is on the line. Good morning, Velissa.
Good morning. How are you, Fred? You're doing a great job for Sandy this morning.
Well, thank you very much, Velissa. You're my number one fan. There you go. I think you'd like to talk about this issue of where the Republicans are on abortion.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, because that was my... I didn't vote for the president in particular.
Mm-hmm.
But I voted for the platform, the Republican platform, because it's more of who I am and how I vote. So they really need to, I mean, it was good to ban, but don't you think that we should do more and just completely be done with abortion in America?
Oh, absolutely. Listen, I'll let you listen offline. You're absolutely right. Abortion should be banned completely. But I think the thinking in all of this is that incremental. Let's get this done, and then we can move on to the others. because the reality is there are not that many abortions done after 20 weeks. They tend to be done in the early part. But, you know, this would be a step in the right direction. And the counterpoint to this is, if we can't pass a bill that bans abortion after 20 weeks, if we can't get that passed, then it points to an attitude problem, whether it's Democrats or Republicans that are standing in the way. And that's why we mentioned a few moments ago, Senator Lindsey Graham, willing to introduce this bill in the Senate. It passed the House earlier this week. Senator Lindsey Graham yesterday saying, yeah, I'm all for this bill. I'm all for banning abortions after 20 weeks. But you know what? I think we should have 60 votes. We should stick with that filibuster margin before. He knows he's not going to get 8 Democrats to support him. He knows that.
He's not serious.
He's not serious about it. And that's what really irks a lot of people who help put Republicans back into power. And, you know, it's very interesting, folks. I was reading this morning, I believe this is Down Syndrome Awareness Month, and the president issued a statement yesterday fully in enforcing the idea that we ought to be protecting these people. And, of course, this is in the wake of a European country almost proudly saying that they've almost wiped out Down syndrome. The reason, and the way they're doing that is doing abortions on little unborn babies who are detected to have Down syndrome. But there you have a president who I believe is very, very pro-life. Yes, he may have said other things in the past, but I think right now he is pro-life, and we ought to be thankful of that. Many conservatives just believe the rest of the Republicans would really get serious about this and join him in that. All right, back to our phones. Oklahoma, Lori, good morning, and welcome to Sandy Rios in the Morning.
Good morning, and thank you for filling in for her.
My pleasure.
My comment is a question, I guess, in reality. I am heartbroken over what happened in Las Vegas and feel like that we're not getting the whole story. I find that the way the left came out about gun control and gun laws and all this ridiculous, shameful behavior that we saw and heard was just a slam to those who suffered violence in the worst, unimaginable, unexpected place that you would think. Mm-hmm. However, it's ironic that they are so vocal about what happened in Vegas and with regards to the guns, and they find that horrible, but yet they condone and support and push and push and push for other forms of violence like abortion. Mm-hmm. And it happens in a place that should be safe and unheard of. And it's heartbreaking that we live in such a culture and people support this group of people when they don't even realize the truth behind the Democratic Party, the left side. We are living in a world where propaganda overrides truth, and it's absolutely heartbreaking.
You're absolutely right, Lori. We really do appreciate your comments on this, and it's absolutely true. You know, the left, and as far as political parties go, the Democratic Party is 100% behind the ability of Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers to carry out their slaughter of unborn babies. And they want your dollars, taxpayer dollars, to pay for it. That's what they're all about. And it is amazing to me there are people within the Democratic Party who describe themselves as pro-life. How can you be part of a party that's going against what you say represents your values? I just don't understand that. But let's turn our attention, as we've been doing, to the Republican Party. The Republican Party has in their platform that they support the unborn. But I think this is even worse. At least the Democrats are consistent. They're consistent with their platform. The Republican Party's, many members of the Republican Party are hypocrites, quite frankly, for saying, yes, I support the party platform, but I'm not willing to do, in the case, again, on this bill that's now before the Senate, I'm not willing to do what it takes to get it passed there. And I tell you what, They need to be held accountable. Constituents, whether it's Senator Lindsey Graham, we've been talking about him, not willing to extinguish the filibuster rule on this to ensure that this would have a chance of passing in the Senate. His constituents need to be calling him. You need to be calling your senator's office and say, okay, where is my senator on this? Two things. Is he going to support this bill? Number two, is he willing to say, let's get rid of the 60-vote margin so we can get this passed? As I say, it's not going to have a chance of passing if they stick to this 60-vote margin. And that's where the pressure has to be applied, folks. All right, back to our phones. Let's go to Arkansas this morning. And Jeff. Jeff, good morning. Welcome to Sandy Rios in the Morning.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I will have to say, all right, now, abortion, I'm against abortion. I've got a special needs daughter, and they suggested about aborting her, and I didn't, and she's the love of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you look at who the Democrat, who their major contributor is,
yep,
it's Planned Parenthood.
Uh-huh.
So they don't want to ruffle the feathers of where they're getting their money at.
Yep, absolutely.
So, it's point blank. I look at it like this, follow the money.
Yep.
And follow where the money's coming.
Mm-hmm. And we're still, despite the fact, Jeff, I appreciate your comments, despite the fact that we have the Republicans in control of the House, the Senate, and the White House, still, we're funding Planned Parenthood, which was one of the promises that many Republicans made in the last election. And this is the kind of thing that's bugging conservatives just incredibly. That why don't you take advantage? Because you know what? If the Democrats had control of the White House and the Senate and the House, you can be sure they would be doing everything that needed to be done to get their agenda passed, which is exactly what President Barack Obama did when he was elected back in 2008. That's why we have Obamacare today. That's why we have over 300 federal judges sitting on the bench, nominated, appointed, and approved by the Senate, because then Senate Majority Leader for the Democrats, Harry Reid, was willing to blow away that 60-vote margin in all of this. You see, they understand they need to do what it takes to get their agenda done. Republicans apparently do not have the political will, the political guts, I will say, to do that, it seems. All right, time, I guess we can squeeze in one more call. Let's go to Texas, and Paige is on the line. Go ahead, Paige.
Okay, here's the stats. Since 1998, the NRA has donated $3.5 million to Congress. That figures out to be $190,000 each year, distributed between 400 congressional races. Planned Parenthood this year alone has donated $38 million to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Since Roe versus Wade, the decision has been 60 million babies have been murdered out of convenience.
Yeah.
That is roughly 1.3 million babies per year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't get those kinds of stats. Paige, we appreciate that. You don't get those kinds of stats from the liberal media. They like to talk about the NRA, that the Republicans, who was it, Hillary Clinton said it this week, are in the pocket of the NRA. It's nonsense, and thank you for that call. Hey, listen. Good to be with you on this Friday. We are thankful it's Friday, but you know what? We're most thankful for that we have an opportunity to serve our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And He is in control. He's on the throne, folks. And that's our reason for hope. That's our reason for optimism today. Good to be with you today. Fred Jackson sitting in for Sandy. Lord willing, Sandy will return on Monday. In the meantime, stay tuned for more great programming here on American Family Radio. Have yourself a great weekend. God bless, and bye for now.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.